Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with Gustavo Vasquez Lozano. Gustavo is an expert on the Second Mexican Empire. He has written extensively about early Christianity and Mexico's history. Among his most recent publications are The History of the Aztec Eagles, The Mexican Pilots in World War II, and The Life of Empress Carlotta After the Failed Mexican Empire. Let's hear what he has to say about Cinco de Mayo and the Battle of Puebla. Hi, Gustavo. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. Glad to be here.
So our episode is about Cinco de Mayo, but we made sure to explain that it's not, in fact, Mexican Independence Day for
That's
our
right.
listeners. Can you talk about the actual Mexican independence from Spain leading up to 1821? How was it achieved and why did it take so long?
Okay. Yes, we have to make clear that Mexican Independence Day happened 40 years before the Battle of Cinco de Mayo. And the war started in 1810. So we're talking about 21 years of fighting, which of course was not continuous fighting, but a series of small uprisings here and there in Mexico. And it was actually a lost war. The Mexican revolutionaries were most of them captured and killed, and the movement seemed to have stopped at a certain moment until there was an agreement in the higher sphere of power to achieve Mexican independence in 1821.
Okay. So what happened in Mexico following their victory for independence? Who governed Mexico and what was happening in the country that made it so fractured between all the parties?
That's a very interesting question. When Mexico achieved independence, there was a very short period of time which was peaceful. We have one emperor, Agustin I, and one president, Guadalupe Victoria.
Oh.
And yeah, it's a great name. No.
Oh, a man.
A man. Not actually his real name. His name was Manuel.
Ah, okay.
But he chose a wonderful, very propagandistic name, Guadalupe Victoria, which means Guadalupe and Victory. He was the only president to be able to finish his 4-year term. And after that, we had 40 years of constant fighting and coup d'etats and revolutions, and not a single president until Cinco de Mayo, which is what we're going to talk about, was able to finish peacefully his term of government.
What was La Reforma? And how did it play out? Was this the war, the time period between the independence and the Battle of Puebla? Can you explain what La Reforma was?
That is correct.
Okay.
You asked before, what was the motivo?
Uh-huh, the motivation. Uh-huh.
The motivation of this constant fighting. And there was a division between what they called at the time conservatives and liberals. That is not the modern day division between conservatives and liberal. It was conservatives were the group of politicians and military that was wanting to come back to the old status quo, meaning a strong relationship with the Spanish Empire, a strong influence for the church and the army, and the liberals were more for a republic and the economic liberal theories of the time. And the War of Reforma was the culmination of this enfrentamiento.
Confrontation.
Yes. And it was a very destructive period in the life of the country, which lasted for 3 years. And the country was totally devastated after this 3-year war called La Guerra de Reforma, the War of Reform, which is right before the Battle of Cinco de Mayo.
So perhaps you can explain to us what kind of debt did Mexico fall into during La Reforma? And can you explain to us what the Jecker bonds were?
Sure. The Jecker bonds was a debt contracted by the conservative band, by President Miramón. But when the conservatives lost the war, obviously the liberal triumphant president didn't recognize this debt. Mm-hmm. And he did recognize his past debt. Mexico was very, very indebted at the time. And because of this war, because of the need of reconstruction, President Benito Juarez decided to stop the payment of the external debt. And this is what caused the infuriation of the principal debtors, which were England, France, and Spain.
So all of these countries, England, France, and Spain, did they decide that they wanted to invade Mexico to take advantage of? Why did they do so?
Yes, actually, England, Spain, and France had different purposes. But yes, they did meet. They decided to come to Mexico. They didn't call it an invasion. They had a lot of euphemisms, like some countries still do. They call it a peacekeeping mission. And they called it a civilizing mission. I don't know if that's a word exists.
That, yes.
To bring civilization.
That makes sense.
To that the they country.
Would, yeah.
They issued a joint declaration stating that they were coming not to invade Mexico, not to bring war on the Mexicans, but to help a helpless country, which was divided by internal war during 40 years. They were going to establish peace, and they were going to help them choose a wise government, which will bring them stabilization and peace. But when you study history, you see that the three countries had actually very different agendas. Spain and England were actually to collect the debt or reach an agreement. And that's why they withdrew very soon after the landing. But Spain was a whole different story. They had another agenda, which was to invade Mexico and to conquer Mexico.
And that's when French General Lorenzis, I'm probably saying that incorrectly, but he comes into the picture, right? What is his role in this war?
Okay, he was the commander-in-chief of the French expedition. This is what happened. The three nations landed in Veracruz, which is the port city in the Gulf of Mexico. And President Juarez of Mexico had, in my opinion, very innocent gesture.
Oh.
A very friendly gesture, which was to allow the invading armies to come inward, to march inland, so they will avoid the diseases of the Veracruz coast. And he said, but if we don't reach an agreement, you agree to go back to Veracruz. Was like a gentleman's
Wow, agreement. That's very kind. That's yes. Very kind.
Extremely kind and a little stupid, in my opinion. Because they met the delegates of the intervening nation in Mexico. They met in Cordoba, which is a few kilometers inland, in a safe environment. They reached an agreement. Spain and England said, okay, you promised you'd pay. You promised to honor your debts. We go away. And we're seeing that France is not behaving very well. We're seeing another intentions, and they did. So France looked for a very silly pretexto.
Yeah, pretext.
Pretext.
Uh-huh.
To provoke shootings and start a war. Oh. Because there's a figure here, which is Napoleon III. He wanted to establish an empire in Mexico because he wanted first to stop the American expansion in the continent, and he wanted to establish an empire, a big empire in the American continent, to defend the Latin culture.
I see. So could you walk us through the events that happened at the Battle of Puebla? How did this small Mexican army, and please explain to us who it consisted of, who was in the Mexican army, and who was it led by? How did they defeat this much larger French army?
It was a two-part strategy. First, let me tell you that as soon as you land in Mexico, in Veracruz, you see a huge chain of mountains blocking the way to the interior of the country. There is only a small passage, which was called at the time the El Paso de Atlixco. And that was the only way for the armies to march inland. And France, of course, headed that way. Ignacio Zaragoza was the commander-in-chief of the Mexican army, and he met the French army in the Paso of the mountains, the mountain pass. And he engañó the French army.
He tricked.
He tricked the French army. He presented combat, but in a very inefficient way. They just made a few shots and they ran. And Lawrence's, which you mentioned, which was the French commander-in-chief, said, "Oh, these Mexicans don't want to fight. They are not prepared. They ran from our first shootings." And he sent a telegram to France saying, "We have such superiority of race, army, and culture over the Mexicans that you can consider that Mexico is already conquered."
Wow.
And he was very confident. That was his great mistake. He marched to Puebla, which was the next city on the way. And this is where the battle took place between an army of 4,000 on Mexico, which were not professional soldiers, I must say. They were mostly peasants, reclutados.
Locals?
Yes, which were recruited by the army.
Ah.
And they were not professionally trained, except for a few. And 6,000 soldiers in the French side, which were, of course, very seasoned soldiers, which had fought and experience in Africa, in Europe, and in Asia. And this was the very dissimilar forces. 4,000 poor Mexican peasants against 6,000 elite French soldiers.
I'm assuming well-armed, too.
Of course, and with a greater technology, more experienced, and very, very confident that they were going to be the winners.
So what was their strategy? How did they win? How did they manage to defeat them?
The battle took place outside of the city of Puebla on a hill that was called Loreto and Guadalupe Hills. There are actually two hills. And there was a fort at the top. So Zaragoza and their army retreated in order from the first encounter. They went up the hill, they fortified the hill, and the French came on the next day. They were so confident that they didn't even try to surprise the army. They sat in front of the hill and they started, so the history say, to make coffee. They started to make coffee and to take things very calmly.
Leisurely, I'm sure.
Yes, because they were overconfident. And so they started, maybe I shall switch to Spanish at this
yes. Yeah,
time
you can go ahead.
Mm-hmm. For the more technical part of the war. Okay. Francia llegó a la base de los cerros y empezó con un ataque de artillería.
France arrived at the battle and started an artillery attack.
Sobre los fuertes. Pero después de varios minutos, como eran disparos hacia arriba, hacia la cumbre del fuerte, no pudieron hasta muchas horas después hacer un solo agujero en el fuerte.
So after a few hours, they started shooting, but it was going upwards. They were shooting upwards, and so it was very difficult to be able to penetrate the fort.
Yes. Yes, they couldn't make a single hole, so to speak. And Lawrence's, the French general, was very angry. He decided then, after seeing that he'd spent half of the cannonballs he brought, then he decided to send men on foot. I think it's the infantry. And then started combat body to body. At the first moment, it said that a few Mexicans ran away, in panic because they had the famous Zouaves in front of them, which were very seasoned fighters from Libya and Africa and other exceptional battles. But they came back and they started shooting. But los franceses tenían una batalla hacia arriba del cerro y no esperaban que los mexicanos no hicieron un solo disparo, sino hasta que los tuvieron a 10 metros lejos de ellos.
So the French were essentially battling upwards, and they didn't expect for the Mexican army not to shoot at them until they were much closer. So I'm assuming that saved the Mexican army a lot of ammunition.
Exactly. They started, empezaron una lucha de cuerpo a cuerpo y hubo incidentes heroicos. Muchos mexicanos estaban peleando, por ejemplo, con lazos, with ropes.
Wow. So they were doing hand-to-hand combat.
Yes.
Yes. And fighting with the Mexicans really just had ropes as weapons.
Some of them.
Uh-huh.
Y otros tenían, desde luego, rifles, espadas. Pero creo que el error de Francia fue ser overconfident, muy confiado en que los mexicanos iban a literalmente correr.
So, the Mexicans had swords, they had rifles, but the biggest mistake the French did was be overconfident and assume that the Mexicans were going to run.
Yes, basically. They didn't expect such a fierce fighting. And Francia tuvo que retroceder tres veces. Primero arriba del cerro, después abajo del cerro, incluso tres veces. Y en la tercera ocasión, Zaragoza, el general mexicano, tenía una sorpresa. La caballería, ambos lados del cerro.
So the Mexicans retreated three times, went back and forth three times, until the third time, Zaragoza had a big surprise for the French army, and it was two cavalries.
Yes.
Correct? Uh-huh.
Yes, that is correct. And this was the final blow to the French army, which started to retreat in order. And then came the cavalry of General Porfirio Diaz, which was going to be a very famous president of Mexico in the following years. And he started chasing the French army, which is surprising. He was very brave. He was very angry at the French, and he started following them to finish them off. But Zaragoza ordered him to come back.
So after they the Mexican army obviously defeats the French, this is a big victory for the Mexicans. What happens after? You know, how long does Benito Juarez stay in power?
He stayed in power for a few more years. And what happened to the French? This is very important. General Lawrences was in disgrace and he was recalled to France. And the invasion was delayed for 1 year. France, of course, returned to Mexico with six times more manpower.
Oh, wow.
Which is 24,000 French soldiers. But this was a year later. And this is why Cinco de Mayo is an important battle. This is why it was important to win, because it delayed the invasion for 1 year. And this allowed for war conditions to change. I'm talking especially about the United States, which was in the middle of the Civil War and was not able to help in 1862. But he was coming out of the war, and this year proved fatal for Napoleon.
So after the war, the French invade, and we talked a little bit about the Archduke of Austria, who is sent to Mexico to govern, mostly just out of he's a figurehead, yes. Not really doing much governing. How does Benito Juarez take back the power?
It was thanks to developments in the world politics. First, with the help of the United States, which came out of the Civil War and was able to help Juarez. And second, because Napoleon had his own problems in Europe and he had to recall his troops to fight Prussia and other enemies. This is very important because Napoleon was going to help the Confederate party in the Civil War. So if he had won Cinco de Mayo, he could have reached the northern Mexican border in 1862 or 1863 and help the Confederate army or the Confederate side.
So really, we should all be celebrating Cinco de Mayo here in the United States because it helped our own civil war, essentially.
Exactly. And that is why the Juarez, Benito Juarez side, which is the Republicans, and the Union in the United States were on one side of the war. Right. And Napoleon and the Confederates were on the other side of the war. And that is why Cinco de Mayo unites both countries, because it was a triumph for the Union and for Juarez.
Wow, that's amazing. So at the end of the day, we always ask our experts this question. If you had to blame something or someone, it could be a concept, it doesn't have to be a person, for the invasion of Mexico that led to the Battle of Puebla, who or what would that be?
That's a great question. I think the great guilty who is to blame is Mexico's internal fighting.
Oh.
Mexico's constant fighting, 40 years of wars, 40 years of revolutions, one after the other, 40 years of dissent, violent dissent, I mean, which made Mexico an easy prey for foreign powers and to make it a weak country. Not to be able to discuss politics peacefully, to reach an agreement, to be democratic, this was what weakened Mexico. It's a constant fighting, it's constant revolutions and civil wars.
Gustavo, thank you so much for discussing Cinco de Mayo, which will now take on a new meaning for all of us here at The Alarmist.
Yes, I think both countries should celebrate this important date.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
I thought it was so beautiful just how Gustavo explained how the two of us should really be celebrating Cinco de Mayo, which is today. This episode is dropping on Cinco de Mayo.
On the day. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone. We should be celebrating together. There's a lot of reason here.
I'm sure right now somewhere someone is drinking vast amounts of margaritas.
Yes. And perhaps, you know, and I guess you can celebrate however you want. Right?
It's
We're
true.
Not here to tell you how to celebrate. But, you know, just keeping in mind how our histories are all so connected between all of our neighbors and our different country, you know, the different countries around the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We said, you know, Mexico was unlucky because we were busy. We were lucky because Mexico was busy. That was basically what he said, right?
And essentially, they put off the invasion of Mexico for
enough time to get aid from the U.S. Yeah, it was amazing.
Well, and vice versa, right?
Yeah.
If France wasn't so busy fighting Mexico, then perhaps the Confederates would have had more support. Mm-hmm. Is what what he was saying.
Yeah. Exactly. I also thought it was really, really cool having him take us through the events of that battle. And it really painted a picture for me how Mexico defeated the French in that moment. And you know what actually made me think of? Do you guys remember the Three Amigos?
Yes, of course.
I need to revisit.
But like my dumb... millennial brain thought of the Three Amigos, and isn't that how they defeated the that band of those evil dudes?
Oh.
They like made a few shots, and they put all of the locals in uniform and basically made it feel like there was a larger presence and scared them off. But it was similar; it wasn't the same. But I just found it to be similar enough.
Oh,
Rebecca's
my God.
Looking up
I'm
the Three
literally,
Amigos.
I of course have heard of it, and the images are very clear.
Well, when the French were passing through the passage in Veracruz, and the Mexican army, you know, shot a few shots at them and ran, and that was game, set, match, because that made the French totally overconfident. The image of them finally getting to the hill and sitting and having coffee
that
was like hilarious.
That is so funny.
I feel like this is like a scene from a movie that I've seen that I can't think of, but it's like really like they clearly have the advantage on the home turf, right? They're like, oh, we know the lay of the land. We'll just like fire a few shots, run inland, run up the hills, kind of like they'll follow us in, and then we'll just pluck them off, make ourselves smart.
And amazing acts of bravery from the locals to fight in some cases with just like you were saying, a lasso or with their hand, do hand-to-hand combat against this.
I mean, just imagine you have
army.
This massive French army coming at you and all you have is rope.
Yeah. Somebody throws you like a broken bottle and like some rope and is like, hey, buddy, stand here. The French are going to come. They might have some big guns and stuff. Just kind of just like keep them busy. And then they have the cavalry in the back pocket. I don't do a lot of war history. It's hard for me to like picture all that stuff and relate to it in any way. And so I get a little bit distracted. But it was fascinating hearing him take you through how this battle unfolded.
Well, it seemed to be extremely strategic. On the Mexico side,
yeah.
Just the fact that they held up, they knew that the, you know, shooting upwards was not really going to affect them. And so just like holding off that, that kind of, what
it's
is the
like
word?
A delay strategy. They had the higher ground and they just let France kind of spin their wheels as they were, they were, and then get to a point where he was like, all right, just send the artillery or the infantry.
Right. Right. Now we attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating. So
I was very interested to hear from Gustavo about the little tidbit about how kind of naive Juarez was, or Juarez was when he was
almost like
the three
overly kind.
And he let all three of these invading countries just come inland to get away from the disease. It's like, that's kind of like where you stall them, right?
Yeah.
That's if you're trying to gain an advantage.
Well, he believed them, and to a degree he was right. He was right about the English and the Spanish. They were able to come to an agreement. But the French had ulterior motives. But you know what I just thought of is that, you know, there's a lot of shots that get bought on Cinco de Mayo as well. People do a lot of drinking and take a lot of shots. People on the ground floor should buy shots for the people on the higher ground. That's what should happen. There should be people in balconies.
Oh, so the first floor should buy for the second floor.
Yeah, that the Mexicans.
If you're in a two-story bar.
This is a very specific scenario.
You have to be in a two-story bar in order for this to work.
Maybe shorter people should buy shots for taller
people.
No,
I refuse.
People have it bad enough.
I refuse.
I thought it was interesting that his ultimate blame or choice was to blame it on the infighting, which we did have on the board as a possibility when we talked about this initially, which I feel like perhaps we veered away from it because it seemed like victim blaming, perhaps. But it's interesting to revisit that concept that we spent so much time, that the Mexican people spent so much time fighting amongst themselves that they made themselves vulnerable to outside forces as a result.
Right.
Yes. I think for me, that is such a key piece to this puzzle, because it's a reminder that, you know, I'm always trying to analyze in my own life, like what is worth the fight, what is worth fighting about. Right. Mm-hmm. And the constant fighting over the smaller things really weakens you for when you have to have those big battles.
Wow.
Right.
That's incredible. That just blew my mind. No, really, though, like diplomacy, micro diplomacy is what you're talking about, I guess. It's like working things out in a peaceful way is really exhausting, but it's worth it ultimately because you'll avoid the bigger fights.
Yeah. I mean, listen, this is what they've been saying, you know, with all this like Russian interference and the hacking and the like bots, they're trying to create the infighting here in America so that, you know, right. I mean, who knows what they're going to try and do, but so that they can create some kind of level of chaos in our own society. So it's like, yeah, we got to avoid getting caught up in that because something bigger could be coming along that we're missing because we're not paying attention.
Like all the petty stuff that we fought over while, you know, Trump was president, and now all of a sudden we get the news yesterday about Roe versus Wade.
Yes, you're this just leaked like, draft opinion.
Yeah, why did I care about Trump's tweets so much, you know?
Well, keep your eye on the prize.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to even get into that because it's too depressing. And we're...
It's extremely depressing. Long.
It's but it is a cautionary tale.
So I guess that begs the question, do we want to revisit what we did throw in the jail was French imperialism, and we give the big slap to the Jacobins. How are you feeling about that post interview with Gustavo?
I feel like we should change it. I feel like I think Gustavo made a good point, and maybe it's because the past few days have really shook. I'm shook, as they say. I think that what he said, which was, you know, infighting, really, was really what allowed, was a big contributor. I just think it was a major contributor to this this war. And this
do you
battle.
Think it's a jail? It's a jail candidate or a big slap candidate?
I think we jail it and we slap imperialism. So okay. All right. So French imperialism, you're getting the big slap. Infighting, you're going to the alarmist jail. So, I mean, I loved speaking with Gustavo, and I'm very aware right now of what that infighting, you know, causes, or I don't know. It just feels like such a distraction sometimes from the big problem, right? The big problem that we're really
mm-hmm. Yes,
we just conserve our energies for.
True. And it's also, you know, infighting, you know, that's also a vote of confidence for persuasion. Give persuasion a try. Try diplomacy. Let's be cordial with each other. Let's be forthright and try discussing and working these things out peacefully.
So before we go, I just want to, you know, ask our listeners to really take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. I think it's one of the things that's keeping us going. It really promotes us and creates visibility out there. So if you could take a moment, if you haven't already done so, please take a moment to do so right now. Clayton, are there any new reviews that we have?
Yes, we do have a really fun review that I'd like to share with the alarmy.
Okay.
This one comes from Common Courtesy 2133.
Great name.
Five star, right?
Well, we'll see five how courteous stars. They are.
Yeah, let's see just how courteous. They already covered my hometown disaster, the Lindbergh baby, but I was hooked from episode one. Rebecca has a beautiful balance of humor and gravitas as she covers all these disasters. She and her team, fact checker Chris, number one best guy, Amanda and Clayton.
All right. Very courteous.
Sorry. Gives me hope that we might learn from our mistakes, all while making sure the fashion industry has their toes held to the fire. Each week is something new and events from around the world. The guests and the expert interviews have been above and beyond in humor and quality. I highly recommend the Dodo Aftermath episode. Never thought I'd get jazzed about a bird except by here. Never thought I'd get jazzed about a bird except here we are. Alarm is strong. Our panic is everyone's panic.
Yes, our panic is everyone's panic.
Oh, I have to go re-listen to that Dodo Bird episode. That was a while ago.
I love that expert. He was awesome. Well, thank you, Common Courtesy. 211, I think.
Yeah, 2133.
2133. Thanks for the kind words and, you know, Chris, you are our number one best
number
guy.
Number one best guy.
I got a mug that says that and everything.
Okay.
Sell fact that checker.
Well, tune in next week because we are going to be discussing the murders of Norman Bates.
Erios. Powered by
ACAST. Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.